Last week I was off for a few days, and one of those days I decided with my brother to take a drive, and we drove down to Woodstock with the sole purpose of visiting one of my favorite independent bookstores, and that is The Golden Notebook. It was a beautiful, beautiful summer day. We parked the car easily and walked around the walked around the village, and we may have had a close call with a dump truck, but other than that, walked in and just browsed, and it was a lovely, lovely time. James Conrad is with us on the Golden Notebook. Right on Tinker Street in Woodstock, and he's been keeping track of the literary pursuits that are worth our time, and it's always a pleasure to have James on the program. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Joe. I also think you're going to be hippity-hoppiting down to Woodstock next week.
I am.
We are doing a...
I'll be back.
Yes, you are doing a panel with myself and with Marshall Karp for the Woodstock Library.
That's right. Marshall Karp, of course, a wonderful crime writer who has his own Womax and Big series, but also is a writer with James Patterson in the NYPD Red series, and is a great writer, very, very funny man, and a very popular writer, and he'll be with you.
Yes.
And me, and we'll be talking about books, how you sell them.
Freewheeling conversation about the intersection of libraries, booksellers, writers, and readers.
All parts of the book selling and book reading.
Yes, and it's all in support of our wonderful library in our town, that we have a really great library in our town, and how we all interact with it.
And that's Thursday night.
Thursday, March 8th,
September.
September 8th from 7 to 9 at the Meskel Horbeck Community Center, 56 Rock City Road, kind of right in the center of town, but right on an edge. And it's free, 7 to 9 p.m.
Excellent. So we look forward to that. You can find out more information on the Golden Notebook site, on our site, and it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a good night. Excellent. Okay.
All right.
So good books.
Yes. Let's start with, for people who have been a big fan of the young adult writer Jacqueline Woodson. She's also a really great middle grade and children's writer. It's very exciting. She's published her first adult novel, Another Brooklyn, and it certainly doesn't disappoint at all. Now, in a way, my feeling on it is it seems like it's a young adult book written for adults. And I don't mean that in any type of a condescending way. What I mean is that it's a very short novel, and it follows the friendship of four girls living in Brooklyn, New York, which already sounds like a frame of a young adult book. But it's for adults in the sense that it deals with very adult issues such as teenage sex and pregnancy, drug use, rape and violence, and as well as other psychological issues as the girls struggle with absent parents and the expectations of the ones who are present in their lives. Ultimately, the book also reads more like poetry than prose. Each paragraph is separated by large chunks of white space. In a way, you can almost open it anywhere and just read one of these paragraphs, and it reads almost like a poem. And its biggest achievement, in my opinion, is that as a very short book, Woodson packs so much into it. It's the entire history of a whole family, the complex relationship between four young women, and it also examines how different cultures around the world deal with death and what their rituals are when faced with it. And it's a meditation on memory, how memory is this living being in your life. And ultimately, it's just an incredibly short book that you can read in one short sitting. But what Another Brooklyn really means when you come away from it is Another Brooklyn is the whole world outside of Brooklyn and what these women anticipate and hope for in their lives. And you come away from this feeling all of that. It's an absolutely gorgeous book.
Jacqueline Woodson's Another Brooklyn.
Staying on the short novel theme, there's Nine Island by Jane Allison. Now, this is a very different version of a short book, where Another Brooklyn really sort of astonished me with the amount of history and character she covered. Nine Island is sort of this funny book where nothing really seems to happen. I was reading it, kind of asking myself why I kept reading, but I kept being drawn into it. What the story is, it's about a middle-aged woman who translates the classical poet Ovid professionally for a living. And she lives alone in one of those huge Miami condominium complexes. And she swims every day in the pool. She befriends an elderly couple. She tries to relocate a duck that's trapped in one of those weird grassy intersection triangles. And that's really kind of all that happens for most of the book. But a lot more happens, because it's really about a woman in her middle age who's struggling with the idea of being alone in her life, and how she's had a life with marriage and with various lovers. But now she's wondering whether that's all over with now, and she's going to be alone for the rest of her life. And then suddenly in the last 10 pages of the book, all this action happens that you always kind of knew was waiting under the surface, and it kind of explodes finally. But one thing about Jane Allison, I'd never heard of her before, but she's written three other novels and a memoir, and I think it's time to pay attention to her because she's absolutely a wonderful writer. So check it out.
Excellent. Nine Island by Jane Allison.
Now, to turn things around a little bit, I want to talk about kind of a big old-fashioned epic novel, Crisadora by Tim Murphy. It's one of the most ambitious novels I've read in a long time. The author was at our store doing a reading a couple weeks ago, and he discussed about how he didn't want to write another AIDS novel. He wanted to write a novel about the survivors of AIDS. And we now live in a world where the disease, though it's still a great threat, is treatable, and the awareness and education about it's become a very common part of our lives. So now, what are the survivors like for AIDS? And this book evolves around a dozen of characters who jump back and forth in time. They go from coast to coast. And it's part of what I mean about the book being so ambitious. It also includes scenes from AIDS demonstrations and political meetings, which is something that's not easy to do in fiction. But Murphy kind of pulls this off because he focuses really on these characters, and they're complicated and they're realistic. And as a reader, you go in and out of liking them just as they go in and out of liking each other. And he grounds it all in this building, the Crisadora, this very historic building in the East Village, which at the start of the book in the early 90s was when it became the most famous because it was the ultimate symbol of gentrification of urban neighborhoods. It was on the cover of New York Magazine and all this. And it was this very old building that became condos right at it in an area of Manhattan that was at that time an incredibly low income and diverse area of artists and all this. And basically, there were huge demonstrations and it was a big drama. And what in the end comes out of it is that the building becomes a kind of metaphor of characters being forced together and from very diverse groups, from gay and straight, rich and poor, white, Latin, and African American. And the book just has tons of twists and turns all the way up to the end, and you just have to keep reading.
Crisadora by Tim Murphy.
One other, I'm kind of doing this backwards where I'm promoting events that already happened, but we had Vernon. I know, it's not really good.
That's all right.
I know.
They can still get the book.
That's all right. We have Vernon Benjamin now of the history of the Hudson Valley from Civil War to modern times. And he was at our store a couple weeks ago, too. And also, like Crisadora, we have autographed copies of these books, so you should come and pick them up. Anyways, this is, of course, the marvelous history of the Hudson Valley River. And what's key to this history is the river. He really uses the river as his way of telling the history. It's the main character of the book. It's the source of travel, migration of people, of large varieties of industry. And by following this, and he also is a gorgeous writer about the river, too, and which is another thing I love about it is when he talks about that. But when he talked to the store, he mentioned that he actually wanted to publish this two volumes of this book as one book initially. And if you've ever seen the volume one and now volume two, they're huge.
Yeah,
and I can't even imagine that people could even hold it in their hand.
No.
And he actually even agreed later that he thought the publisher was probably right to break it into two. But as a history book, it's really great because you can just either read it straight through or just randomly open it anywhere. And you can read about the start of the Saratoga racetracks or the post-World War I artists and intellectuals who started spending their summers in Croton and Nyack and eventually Woodstock. And there's a whole chapter on WAMC, too. I think you probably all know about that. I'm sure you must have had a thing about it. It literally mentions the 1-800 number like 16 times in this chapter. It must be quite
very
popular.
Very cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we're known for.
It's you can't go wrong with a book that promotes the BMC. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. And he'll be on our airwaves here shortly, so that's good as well. So
that's a wonderful book. And
it is.
Every Hudson Valley home needs to have both volumes of this.
Great. It is Vernon Benjamin's The History of the Hudson Valley from the Civil War to Modern Times.
I seem to come on here every time and promote something Scandinavian. So full disclosure, my father was Norwegian and my mother was Swedish. And this time I'm bringing The Nordic Theory of Everything by Anu Partanen. This author, she married an American and left Finland and came to our country. And she suddenly found herself without health care, no maternity leave, elder care benefits, college tuition not paid for, just basically living in a whole new world from what she was used to in Scandinavia. And the book might seem like, as an American, you might have a knee-jerk response of this is some foreigner coming and critiquing American life, and oh, it was so much better where I'm from. But what she's actually doing in this book, which is interesting, is she's embracing a lot of American ideals of individualism and freedom and a desire to be free of government control. And that's where it's tricky, because most Americans view Scandinavia as a place of incredibly high taxes and almost like a welfare state where you have your healthcare paid for, your college, all that gets paid for, but you have to pay all these really high taxes, so the government just kind of owns you and all this. But her theory is that the opposite is true, that once you remove controls like worrying about your healthcare payments, worrying about college tuition debt, you suddenly are able to be free and you can be the individual and you can do all the things you aspire to do in your life. And she ties this also to her theory on love, her Nordic theory on love, she calls it, which is that two people can truly be in love once they are completely independent and they're not dependent on each other for anything involving like healthcare, all that kind of stuff, and they can finally show their true love for each other. The book's been criticized because it's not really a policy book. She doesn't really offer any specific solutions to how America can suddenly just pick itself up and turn itself into a Scandinavian country. But what is happening right now in our country with Obamacare, whether you love it or hate it, or things like advancements in maternity leave for women as well as men, all the campaign talk about free college tuition, it seems there's a bit of a tipping point happening where we're starting to dabble our feet in the water of some Scandinavian values, and maybe that's how we'll become more American.
The book is The Nordic Theory of Everything in Search of a Better Life. And we have probably time for one more.
One more. Let's quickly just do String Theory by David Foster Wallace on tennis. Are you a tennis fan, Joe?
Not playing, no, but I like to watch
it. Yeah, yesterday I was at the U.S. Open, the start of the U.S. Open
here
in New York. Yeah, I was lucky enough to get one of those free corporate tickets through a friend of a friend of a friend, and it was really kind of awesome. Anyways, David Foster Wallace was a huge tennis fan in his life. And he did this collection of essays on tennis. Well, he didn't do the collection. They were collected later after he died. But included in it is his famous Roger Federer essay, which was in the New York Times, which is called one of the greatest essays on tennis ever written, which is appropriate as it's about one of the greatest male tennis players ever. And he played tennis as a junior, but he mainly, as an adult, kind of realized how writers and philosophers are attracted to the game because of the mental aspect of it. And it's not just being the amazing athlete you need to be, but you also need to really have a big mind out there on the tennis court. So it's a wonderful book, beautifully packaged, great gift for all of your tennis fans.
Good stuff. Well, we are out of time, but we do want to remind you, you got a couple of events coming up that are very cool.
Yes, we do. We have this weekend on Saturday, we have Matt Buau, Talking Walls, Casting Out the Post-Contact Stonewall Building Myth. That's at 2 o'clock on Saturday. It's all about the stone walls in the Hudson Valley. Also, Michael Schumann at 4 o'clock, Her Again, Becoming Meryl Streep. And it's the biography of Meryl Streep he wrote. He's the New Yorker writer. It's going to be a great event, too, all about Meryl Streep. Maybe she'll come.
And then, of course, Thursday night, you, me, Marshall Karp.
Week from Thursday, September 8th.
A week from Thursday,
yes.
September 8th. And we'll be at that event, 7 p.m., and it'll be great. And where is it? Where do
it's
I have to go
at
again?
where do you have to go again? Hopefully you'll find parking.
What do I put in the GPS?
It's at the Meskel Horbeck Community Center.
There you go.
56 Rock City Road, Woodstock. You'll
Excellent.
Find it. Just ask anybody. They'll point you to it.
Terrific. It's always a pleasure. James Conrad, thank you very much.
I'll see you next Thursday.
I look forward to it. You can find out more about James's list by going to goldennotebook.com. Visit them at 29 Tinker Street, or also check out the list on our website, wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.